The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. Of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville. We
love it. Toters and Toadettes, welcome to the show. It's another fine week here at Roller J Studios. We're so glad you can join us. It is Monday, March 4th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We got a lot of news to get to, so let's not even stop here before we get to the news. And it looks like I've put the news car on up when it shouldn't have been up. Doesn't matter. We're going to have a good show anyway. One little mistake can't hurt us. So on today's show, we are going to be speaking with one of my favorite moms for marijuana, Sharon Raver from Atlanta, Georgia. Actually, she's not from Atlanta, but I bring up Atlanta because we're going to be doing the Southern Cannabis Reform Conference down in Atlanta, Georgia next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend. So she'll be on the show today to tell you all about that conference. We're really excited to start pushing for legalization in the Bible Belt. And no better place to start than Atlanta, Georgia. Also on today's show, I got a study from Hartman and Huestis. Marilyn Huestis works a lot of these studies for the National Institutes on Drug Abuse. And this study was published in a clinical journal, and it made a stunning admission that there is no direct correlation between impairment and cannabis concentrations in the blood. Yes, we're very excited about that announcement, and we're getting into that study in the Radical Rant today. I'll tell you a couple of other things that come from it and some of my political suggestions on what to do about this push for per se DUID legislation. Also on today's show, it's Roots Monday, and since we're going to be in Atlanta, Georgia, we are going to be meeting up with Chief Greenbud. He's actually signed on to perform there as well. Seems like every time I go to the South, I run into Chief Greenbud. So for today's Daily Toker Tune, we're going to bring you something from his album, Chief Greenbud 3, which is available at chiefgreenbud.com. You can buy it on iTunes. I did. And the song for today is Life, Liberty, and a Real Good Time. Three things I definitely endorse. But before we get to all of that, we've got to get to our 420 radio news, all sorts of headlines. I've been covering drug testing for welfare. Well, it's popped up in the federal Congress. We'll talk about that. The Kentucky House is going to vote on hemp on Wednesday. Iowa medical marijuana's bill does not look good at the moment. Washington's going to delay announcement of that pot czar job, and some news from Copenhagen, Denmark on a proposal to legalize marijuana. All that and more coming up on today's Russ Belville Show. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Cast your eyes up to the skies. What is it to live and die?
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Now it's time for the 420 Radio News for Monday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Welfare drug testing bill introduced in Congress. This from HuffingtonPost.com. Representative Stephen Fincher, Republican of Tennessee, has a bill that would require states to randomly test 20% of the people receiving benefits from the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, which spends roughly $16 billion per year supporting poverty-stricken parents with monthly checks averaging $392. Fincher said in a statement, quote, currently, the federal government enables drug abusers a safety net by allowing them to participate in the TANF program. Instead of having to make the hard choice between drugs and other essential needs, abusers are able to rely on their monthly check to help them pay their bills, end quote. In Congress and in state legislatures across the country, Republicans have sought to implement welfare drug testing programs in recent years. Few measures have become law, as testing can be expensive, and there's not much data reflecting a widespread drug problem among welfare recipients. Civil liberties advocates successfully sued to halt the most sweeping drug screening law implemented in Florida in 2011. In an attempt to alleviate constitutional concerns, Fincher's bill would require people seeking aid to sign a waiver of constitutional rights with respect to testing, according to the text of the measure. Last week's ruling in the Florida case said the Supreme Court has invalidated searches premised on consent, where it has been shown that consent was, quote, granted in submission to authority rather than as an understanding and intentional waiver of a constitutional right. Kentucky House votes on hemp on Wednesday. I'm sorry, Kentucky House committee to vote on hemp on Wednesday, from the Courier-Journal. Agriculture Commissioner James Comer said Monday that a Kentucky House committee will vote Wednesday on a bill to allow hemp farming if the federal government goes along. Comer, in a Twitter message, said that he met with House Agriculture Chairman Tom McKee, where the Democrat said that a vote will be taken Wednesday when the committee meets. McKee adjourned a meeting last week after 2 hours of testimony without taking a vote. Comer spokeswoman Holly Von Luter said McKee promised a vote on the bill as it passed the Senate and not on a vote on the substitute language that McKee had drafted that would have placed the bill's regulatory provisions with field trials by the University of Kentucky. The bill would regulate hemp production if the federal government allows it. U.S. Senators Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, both from Kentucky, have proposed federal legislation that would distinguish hemp from marijuana, clearing the way for cultivation. The latest Courier-Journal Bluegrass poll found that 65% of Kentuckians favor legalizing hemp for industrial uses, compared to 22% opposed and 13% unsure. Medical marijuana bill likely dead in the Iowa legislature. A proposal to legalize marijuana for medical use is likely dead for this session, reports MinnesotaCBSLocal.com. A Senate subcommittee approved the bill Monday, but the panel's chairman, Iowa City Senator Joe Balcom, said the proposal likely won't go further because there isn't support for it in the full committee. The bill would allow patients with a qualifying condition, such as cancer, to get a prescription for medical marijuana. Nonprofit dispensaries could provide marijuana to eligible patients. Republican subcommittee member Senator Joni Ernst opposed the bill, saying it would be difficult to ensure dispensaries wouldn't sell marijuana to people without a prescription. A House subcommittee has rejected a similar bill. Washington State delays announcement of marijuana consultant, from Seattle Times. Washington State received so many bids for the new position of marijuana consultant that officials are delaying the announcement of a winner. Liquor Control Board spokesman Mikhail Carpenter said there were 98 applicants for the job, which entails advising the board on rules governing Washington's new legal marijuana industry. The board had planned to announce the presumptive winning bid on Tuesday, but Carpenter says it's taking a while to sort through the bids. The board says it doesn't expect to announce a winner before March 13th. Mayors reject legal cannabis proposal from the Copenhagen Post. In Copenhagen, a majority of the city council dreams of legally selling cannabis from pharmacies throughout the city to residents who are over 18 and have a home address within the council's borders. The plan, according to Mayor Frank Jensen, would be a blow to the gangs who finance a large part of their illegal activities with money earned through the illegal cannabis trade. The council also wants to have closer contact to young cannabis abusers who today are left to interact with criminals. But in advance of the conference, several mayors from Copenhagen's neighboring councils are speaking out against the capital city's wish for a council-run hash market. That's your 420 Radio News for Monday, March 4th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines and take a look at the Colorado medical marijuana industry and how it has declined by 40% in just the past 2 years. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack, go!
That's the Reaper Man.
That's the Reaper Man.
I believe he's losing his mind.
I think he's lost his mind.
This is a Russ Belville Show news alert. Whatever you do, don't smoke pot. You don't want to turn out to be a loser like Olympian Michael Phelps, actor Jack Nicholson, singer Miley Cyrus, rocket scientist Dr. Carl Sagan, pop star Rihanna, actress Cameron Diaz, country legend Willie Nelson, President Barack Obama, Cy Young pitcher Kim Hensicum.
Have you ever met that funny Reaper Man? If he says he swam to China and he sells you South Carolina, then you know you're talking to that Reaper Man.
And over 100 million other Americans.
Have you ever met funny Reaper Man? If he says he walks the ocean and he...
All right, time for us to go behind the headlines. It's 13 past the hour, and a story coming out of the Denver Post takes a look at Colorado medical marijuana businesses that have declined by 40%, according to their statistics. What they note here is that in the summer of 2010, after the legislators passed a law legitimizing dispensaries, there were 1,117 medical marijuana businesses in Colorado. Now, this is data from the Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division. This includes not just the dispensaries, but also the infused product manufacturers, okay, that they can make edibles, basically. By the end of that year, by the end of 2010, right, so from summer 2010 to the end of 2010, it had risen by another, 20 or so. There was like 1,131, which was the peak. So 1,131 medical marijuana businesses in the state of Colorado. Today, there are 675. So in terms of just the sheer number of the businesses that exist, it shrunk more than 40%. But I think the headline's just a little bit misleading, and that's why I wanted to get in behind the headlines here, because if that was all you saw going through your Google News feed, you'd think, oh my God, there's been a huge drop in the medical marijuana business. And that's just not so. What is happening in Colorado is the business is maturing and is becoming basically like a lot of other businesses where
a lot of small distributors get picked up by larger distributors, and the market kind of starts to equalize. And some of the data in this story bear that out. Jill Lamoureux is a former dispensary owner. She's also been a guest on this show. Told the Denver Post, it's a capital-intensive industry, and it's extremely high risk. The profit margins for the industry have changed significantly. In 2010, an eighth of an ounce of marijuana often sold in dispensaries for $50. Last month, Lamoureux said in a RAND Corporation panel discussion on marijuana, it goes for half that. So when your product goes from $50 an eighth to $25 an eighth, that has a lot to do with the competition. And you're going to have a green rush like they had in Colorado, and that's going to lead to a lot of distributors. In order for these distributors to compete, they've got to find ways of lowering prices at the production side and at the retail side. And as the prices come down, those entrepreneurs who aren't so skilled in business and marketing are going to fall by the wayside. So this decline of 40% isn't some gloom and doom scenario. It's just the nature of markets, of a boom and a bust. You know, we have a big green rush, and now we're having, I guess, a green crunch, you could say. This is a Robert Fruchtel, who's with the Medical Marijuana Business Exchange, kind of agrees with this. He says, quote, "We're seeing the maturity of an industry. At a fast pace, we're seeing something that was brand new now coming into the early stages of a new business cycle." Fruchtel said the dispensaries that thrive today have a lot of money behind them, which they have used to scoop up failing businesses and create dispensary chains. They have business-savvy managers. And perhaps most important, they have large growing facilities that churn out marijuana that people want to buy. Because medical marijuana dispensaries must grow most of what they sell, the surest way to expand a business's front room is to improve the back room. And what he's referring to there, this 1284, I believe, is what the law was that came through, declared that the dispensaries, businesses here running under the Colorado Medical Marijuana Enforcement Division, 70% of what they sold in marijuana had to be produced by them, right? So this kind of, a lot of people would say, you know, killed the industry of the small local growers, many, many local growers out there growing and just, you know, selling their marijuana to a dispensary and then it getting sold back out to the public. But there's a lot of good to come out of having these places growing most of their product at one place when it comes to security and consistency of product and so forth. So there's a lot of controversy over that in Colorado, but this is the result of it, is we've seen that these dispensaries that have a better backroom, they have better grows, are the ones that are thriving. Another thing that we've seen is that the actual demand for the product hasn't really changed much. There's about 108,000 registered patients in Colorado. That's about the same number they had in 2010. They have the same number of the large dispensaries. They classify them as type 1, 2, and 3. These type 3 dispensaries that serve more than 500 patients, the big, you know, the harborside sized ones, they're the same. They've pretty much remained steady. The type 2 dispensaries, the ones, the mid-size that serve between 300 and 500, have actually gone up. So yes, there may be fewer dispensaries, but they seem to mostly be these small type 1 dispensaries, these small mom and pop shops that have either become part of chains to be part of these larger type 2 and type 3 dispensaries. The state sales tax revenues have grown. Department of Revenue collected $5.4 million in sales tax from the businesses that ended in the last fiscal year, last June. The amount is $1 million more than the state collected in the 2011 fiscal year, and extrapolates out to about $186 million in gross sales. But a lot of what's causing some of these dispensary owners to get out of the market is artificial pressures from the prohibition we still see at the federal level. Lamoureux testified about how she'd had to go from bank to bank to bank to bank because all these banks would stop the checks and close the business accounts of these dispensaries upon pressure from federal regulators. You'd see the problem with landlords where they would get threatening letters from the feds and you know, kick out these dispensary owners, kick out these dispensary businesses. And the fact that you just have to put so much capital into a business like this to get the security that you need, the cameras, to have the amount of staff that's necessary, all of the details that go into running a business, just makes it very, very difficult for anyone to thrive in this business. So it's not too surprising that under a regulated scheme, we're starting to see more mid-range dispensaries that are succeeding. The large dispensaries are continuing to go on their way. And a lot of people will lament the fact that this seems to be the end of the small mom and pop dispensary supplying grower, but that is the world of the legal marketplace. I mean, we don't see a whole lot of people that are brewing beer in their basement and selling it to the grocery store and having that on the shelves. You have to actually have a microbrewery. You have to actually follow regulations to pull something like that off.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Sergeant Craig Simpson.
There are other tests which officers can perform that may help them to make this determination. Tests such as one called lack of convergence, which looks to see whether or not a person is able to cross their eyes. Marijuana is a drug that prevents a person from being able to cross their eyes. Interestingly, it is the only drug category that doesn't allow a person to cross their eyes and also does not allow the person to exhibit a jerkiness of their eye. So it's a unique drug in that sense that is the only one to provide that influence.
What's happening, cool cats? This is Big Daddy, and I want you to cruise on over to the Funky Roller Rink. We'll be grooving all night long. Doors open at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, every Thursday night, right here on RadicalRuss.com.
Funky. Delicious.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Oh, yeah, what can we say about Chief Greenbud that isn't already part of some court record somewhere? No, just teasing, because Chief Greenbud's a good friend of us, good friend of the show, and we've been seeing each other on the marijuana circuit for years now, and even performed together at the Normal National Conference here in Portland, Oregon. So always love getting a Chief Greenbud tune up for the day, and the reason why we're going to play some CGB today is because I'm headed to the Southern Cannabis Reform Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. Next Wednesday, I think I fly out, and then we'll be there for Friday and Saturday. Chief Greenbud will be playing some gigs there. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm doing a couple of presentations. You've seen the Drug War game show one. I'm doing that one. I'm preparing my debunking Kevin Sabat and Project Sam presentation. I might show you some highlights of that throughout the rest of this week and maybe a little next week. It's a lot of bullshit to have to wade through, let me tell you. But anyway, since Chief Greenbud will be down there. I'm having a hell of a time talking today. I do not know why. Since Chief Greenbud will be down there in Atlanta, it kind of led me to his third album, Chief Greenbud 3, which you can find at chiefgreenbud.com. And I wanted to pick one that we haven't had in our rotation before. So here it is. This is Life, Liberty, and a Real Good Time.
Gonna talk about life, liberty, and a real good time. You take care of your backyard, buddy, I'll take care of mine. You and I ain't eye to eye on what Jefferson had in mind when he talked about life, liberty, and a real good time. Well, you can tap my phone and follow me home and put your helicopters up in the air. I know right from wrong and short from long, and I damn sure know what's fair. I know a thing or three about democracy and what it means to you and what it means to me. In the home of the brave, the land of the free, you can disagree, but just let me be with my life, liberty, and a real good time. You take care of your backyard, buddy, I'll take care of mine. You and I ain't eye to eye on what Jefferson had in mind when he talked about life, liberty, and a real good time. Well, you can keep your notions
off my farm and out of my children's mind. Cause my heart's pure and my spirit's strong and my bud is always kind. You tell me who to be, I refuse. I'm sick of all the fools making all of the rules. Give me the choice, let me choose, and I'll pay my dues without singing the blues about life, liberty, and a real good time. You take care of your backyard, buddy, I'll take care of mine. You and I ain't eye to eye on what Jefferson had in mind when he talked about life, liberty, and a real good time. Three-time loser, you know. I'm on a four-way street at a five and dime. Hey, give me a six-pack to go. Well, CBS and NBC, CNN and ABC, CIA and the KGB, FBI is an LIE, but not life, liberty, and a real good time. You take care of your backyard, buddy, I'll take care of mine. You and I Jefferson had in mind when he talked about life, liberty, and a real good time. Yeah, I'm talking about life, liberty, and a real good time.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy!
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
'Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. 'Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm...
Hey, how's it going? My name's Will. I don't work at a used record store. I don't own an iguana, although I'm sure they make great pets. I don't have dreadlocks or play the acoustic guitar. I can remember quite well, thank you, and no, I don't constantly have the munchies. When 4:20 comes around, I've still got 40 minutes of work left. I've never hit a girl on a bike with my car or shot my friend with a shotgun. I've never had to apologize for letting a girl I was watching drown in a pool while I was getting high because, duh, I wouldn't be getting high if I was around children. I'm a regular guy who works regular jobs, just like the majority of all Americans who use marijuana occasionally and responsibly. My name is Will, and I'm...
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everybody. 28 after the hour, and joining us by telephone from the beautiful state of Georgia, we have Sharon Ravert on the phone from Georgia Moms for Marijuana and Peachtree Normal. And do you have another title yet, dear?
Yes, you, but we're not going to mention all those. Who cares?
Who cares? All right. Well, it's great to have you on the line again. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Russ. Happy Monday, everybody.
Happy Monday. Last time we had you on the show, you weren't actually on the show, but we were showing your appearance on South Carolina News. Was it a Fox News station?
Yeah, it was Fox Carolina. That was quite interesting, yeah. Reaching out to the conservatives in the South.
I know. How's the reaction been to that in your home area there?
It's been pretty good. Got a few more interviews out of it, and that's always good, just spreading the word down here. I'm not finding a lot of conservatives that are disagreeing at this point. I think they may be getting on the bandwagon a little bit with this tax thing, you know.
Well, that's good news. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, it is good. So we're working at the state capitol a little bit this year. I don't think we were hoping we had some confirmation that a couple of resolutions were going to be introduced, but they haven't happened yet. So we're just holding our breath and hoping something comes. So we have to study everything in Georgia. So it's usually pretty much if they are interested in even talking to you, they bring up a study committee and study it for a year anyway. So
yeah. Slow progress there, but still progress nonetheless that you're out, you're speaking, you're getting good reaction on even the Fox News channel. That's good stuff. We have a picture up on our screen right now of you with our own friend Big Daddy Fink up there.
Yeah,
been doing a whole bunch of events out there, and he will be there too, I understand, in Atlanta for this Southern Cannabis Reform Conference.
Yes, he will. We will be so glad to be hosting both of you guys. It'll be exciting.
Yeah.
Getting the group back together.
That's right. And they're never going to stop us. And let's give folks the details on this event. Is it indoors, outdoors, the time, all that kind of stuff if people want to go?
Okay, yeah, sure. It's going to be held at the complex at Spring Forth in Atlanta in Midtown. It is an indoor event, although there is a beautiful area outside. I'm sure we'll be, having smoke breaks and chilling out, and enjoying the VIP Under the Stars event that Friday night. It is March 15th and 16th. It's a Friday and Saturday. You can search for it if you're interested in tickets. I guess the best place to go would just be go to peachtreenormal.org and go to our events page. And all the information's there, where you can get your tickets, where you park when you come, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have ourselves a real good time. I'm bringing a couple of presentations to show, and I've seen your list of speakers, and we got a whole bunch of good people that are going to be at this event. Why don't you tell us about some of them?
Okay, yeah, sure. We've got people from all kinds of different groups. We've got people from LEAP. We've got people from SSDP, Camp, Normal, and different groups around the South. We've got a lot of different normal groups that are coming as well. Diane Goldstein from California will be flying out and doing a presentation about her work with LEAP. Her presentation is going to be about reducing death, disease, crime, and addiction, the case for the regulation of cannabis.
Oh, yeah.
We have, of course, you doing, everybody's talking about your game that you're going to do, the drug war game, the drug test,
the
I
drug
guess
test,
is what you
that's
call
right.
it.
The only drug test yes. you can pass.
Exactly. That'll be interesting to see who can pass that. We've got Rob Ryan coming down from Miami Valley Normal in Ohio. Sabrina Fendrick will be coming in from D.C. Those are the people that are coming in from, out in the world, out of the South. And then we have a lot of other people coming, from around here. Rick Day is going to be speaking from Georgia Normal and a few other people, Paul Cornwell with Camp and some folks like that. So, yeah, just check it out. All of their bios and pictures and everything are on the website.
That's awesome. And we're really looking forward to this. We'll get the links posted, and I'll have a post for it up at radicalrest.com as well to let people know what's going on with that. You mentioned Sabrina Fendrick will be there. She's with the Normal Women's Alliance. I know you do a lot of work with them, and I'm excited about how many prominent women are, stepping up here in this second decade of the 21st century for ending marijuana prohibition. I understand you just went out to a photo shoot. Is that true?
Actually, I leave on Friday to go. I'm going up to Philly for a Normal Women's Alliance photo shoot. Yeah, Diane Thornbacher's heading that up, and I'm looking forward to that. I've never been to Philly, so we're going up there for that. And I believe Philly Normal is having a 10th anniversary party on the same evening, so I get to do two things. So that's going to be a fun event.
That worked out really good. And this will be the second annual photo shoot, because I know I saw a photo last year and it was foxy.
Right. Yeah, the ladies look pretty. I don't know where they're going to put me, but whatever.
Oh, come
we'll figure
now.
It out.
Come now. You'll be the beautiful Southern Belle in the middle.
Oh, you're sweet.
I sure am. But yes, it's a great thing. And what I liked about the photo shoot too is this very high fashion, you know, New York makeup kind of photo shoot that portrays, you know, cannabis using women as professionals, as sophisticated, as you know, somebody that you want to get to know.
Exactly. We pretty much have put down, I guess, Diane, when she set up everything, wrote, no lingerie. We don't get to go and have a pajama party. Sorry, guys.
Dang. Well, all right. I was hoping I'd get to live stream that, but okay, whatever. So as we get ready to head down to Atlanta, you know, we're getting our presentations and everything ready to go here. And the folks down there, has there been much reporting or reaction to this? Is anyone shocked that there's going to be a marijuana conference in Atlanta?
I don't believe they're really shocked. We've gotten a lot of positive response. In fact, my youngest daughter today just got a text from one of her friends, and she said that she announced it at her little school down in Augusta, Georgia, that we were having it, and even her teacher was excited about it.
Wow.
So people just want to talk about it. I mean, I don't know if all of your listeners got to see the Fox News thing, but it was very well done, I thought, and they did good editing. Mm-hmm. But we're starting to realize that, you know, it's coming this way, thanks to Colorado and Washington and Oregon and everybody that's gone before us with either medical or decrim or legalization, and that we've got to start talking about it. And that's just kind of the way I'm putting it out there. You know, it's coming. Do you want to do it the right way? Do you want to do it the wrong way? Do you want to be proactive or do you want to be reactive? We've got to figure out what we're doing. So even people on the other side are starting to realize, like that doctor said in the interview, he started to say, if it becomes legal, and then he changed it to when it becomes legal. And even the other side is getting the picture at this point. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'm glad you caught that. We showed your appearance on A Different View with Jen and Iva, and they made me pause right there. Did you catch that? He said when. Yeah, we are making great strides. It's really amazing how much the dialogue has changed just in, you know, the past 2 or 3 years. I mean, you're pretty new to doing cannabis activism, and here you are putting on a major regional conference. How has that ride been for you? Has it gone faster or bigger than you ever thought it would?
Oh, yeah. Well, when it started, it was going to be a little 2-hour, 4-hour type little mini conference. And then it turned into 2 days of full, you know, it's just insane. People wanted more and wanted more. And I just hope I did a good job. We'll see come the 15th and 16th because I've never bit off anything like this. And I didn't plan on it being this big, but I guess the South is hungry for it. So, you know, we're trying to give them what they want and hopefully it'll work out good.
Well, how about on a personal level? I mean, you've just taken this on. You start with, you know, we've told your story before about the raid at your house with your daughter and everything. And from that, you've now are part of 2 or more organizations. You're flying to Philly. You're putting on regional conferences. Is this what you'd always hoped it had been? Has it surprised you in any way?
I didn't think it would grow this big this quick.
Yeah.
But that's the way Moms for Marijuana did the same thing. Is personally, it's scary, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I enjoyed the traveling and the talking and the this and that and the other. Organizing volunteers and all that, I'm learning as I go.
Yeah.
So, I've had to cut back a lot on my personal job. I own a business, and so the last month or so, I've been taking as much time off as I could at my business, actually hiring other people to run it. So it grew a lot bigger, but I'm having fun.
Yeah.
And we're going to have fun at the conference come hell or high water. So.
And so you just feel compelled to have to take this leadership role. It's just something that feels like a, I don't know, a calling or something.
Yeah. In the South. Yeah. It kind of has been because I just keep getting more and more positive input, and I really, as a mother of 2 adult children, I don't feel like I'm in as much danger mm-hmm. in the South as women that have children still living with them
right.
and in their home. And so I almost do feel like I have to speak up for the others that can't. But Does that make sense?
Oh, sure.
I mean, because really, I own my own business, so who's going to fire me?
Right.
I can't lose my job for speaking out. I'm in the perfect position to be somebody that can be out in the forefront.
Mm. Yeah, you make a very good point. And not only that, you make a very good spokeswoman, because judging from that that report there on the Fox channel, you just perfectly and eloquently stated a lot of the points that we need to get across to the mainstream. And your image and your history and people knowing that, you're just the mom next door makes it so much a better messenger to hear that message coming out. So we really appreciate everything you're doing, Sharon.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying it, and it wouldn't have happened without a little push from Russ Belville, I'm sure.
The Belville bump. There you go. Don't get involved with me. I'll take you places. Hey, before we let you go, Sharon, remind everybody again, website or how they can learn more about the conference coming up on the 15th and 16th.
Sure. It's the Southern Cannabis Reform Conference, Atlanta, Georgia, March 15th and 16th at the Complex Spring Forest. You can find out all the information you need to at peachtreenormal.org. That's PEACHTREE. normal,
NORML.org. Awesome. We will see you next week in Atlanta, and I guess I should pack some shorts, right?
Yeah, and bring a bathing suit.
Oh, hot tub time. We'll see you there.
All right. See you, Russ. Bye-bye. Thanks.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Normal stands for responsible adult cannabis use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
We're locking up people that take a couple of puffs of marijuana, and the next thing you know, they got 10 years. They've got mandatory sentences, and these judges just say, they throw up their hands and say, there's nothing we can do, there's mandatory sentences. We've got to take a look at what we're considering crimes.
When the Reverend Pat Robertson from television's The 700 Club,
criminalizing marijuana, criminalizing the possession of a few ounces of pot and that kind of thing,
makes more sense on the marijuana issue than the President, the Congress, and the Supreme Court.
It's costing us a fortune, and it's ruining young people. The young people go into prisons, they come out, they go in as youths, and they come out as hardened criminals, and it's not a good thing.
You know we're winning.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah! Radical rant.
How stoned is too stoned to drive? That's the question researchers Rebecca Hartman and Marilyn Huestis set out to discover in their latest meta-analysis, Cannabis Effects on Driving Skills. It was just published in the Journal of Clinical Chemistry. Their conclusions raise serious questions about the application of impairment standards for cannabis-using drivers. With Washington's passage of I-502 marijuana legalization, there now exists a 5 nanogram per milliliter per se DUIC, or driving under the influence of cannabis, standard. If your blood is tested and there's more than 5 nanograms of active THC in a milliliter of your blood, you are determined to be too impaired to drive, regardless if you're impaired or not. In the wake of Amendment 64, Colorado lawmakers are pushing for a 5 nanogram per milliliter per se DUIC. Many states already have worse standards, such as a zero tolerance per se DUIC, where even the presence of inactive marijuana metabolites in your urine from smoking pot a week ago is enough for a conviction on being too impaired to drive today. What's the science behind this standard? Frightfully little. In fact, in the push for a 5 nanogram per milliliter per se DYD standard is really a case of lazy policymakers applying alcohol standards to marijuana. Maybe our constant drumbeat of treat it like alcohol is partially to blame. But they fear pot smoking drivers, and they've created a solution in search of a problem. With alcohol, there is a direct correlation between driving impairment and blood alcohol concentration. Also, there is a direct correlation between how much you drink and how high your blood alcohol concentration will be. Alcohol is a water-soluble molecule. It's metabolized and processed by your body rapidly. This is why, at most bars, you can find that color-coded chart that says if you weigh X pounds and you drank Y drinks, you'll be at Z percent blood alcohol concentration. But with marijuana, THC is a fat-soluble molecule. Your body will store it in your fat. It is not metabolized rapidly or consistently. Interestingly, your body processes and expels most drugs from your system within a day or two, but it holds on to marijuana for as long as possible. Identical twins could smoke the same joint, but both could have wildly different blood THC readings. Plus, there's that issue of tolerance. Frequent marijuana smokers develop a tolerance to the impairing effects of THC. A THC reading that would leave a non-smoker in a stupor, giggling at his navel, would leave a stoner feeling refreshed and alert. Then there's the judgment of the alcohol drinker versus the marijuana smoker. You've heard alcohol referred to as liquid courage. It is that effect where an alcohol drinker underestimates his or her impairment level and overestimates their ability to take risks. An almost opposite effect happens with marijuana. People who are stoned tend to overestimate how impaired they are and underestimate their ability to take risks. This leads to the joke about the stoner waiting for the stop sign to change color. Cannabis users tend to slow down and leave more space between them and other vehicles. A recent story on KIRO News in Seattle demonstrated many of these points. 3 marijuana smokers were recruited for a driving test to be observed by an in-car instructor and a police officer watching outside. One smoker was a young, frequent user. The next was a middle-aged, occasional user. And the last was an older, infrequent user. The frequent toker began the test already at 16 nanograms per milliliter, over 3 times the legal limit. Both the instructor and the officer said her driving was without incident and had no apparent need to pull her over. Yet if she had been pulled over, she may have faced a charge as being as reckless and impaired as if she just had 3 shots of whiskey. Now, throughout this test, the drivers were given 0.3 grams of marijuana to smoke every 20 minutes and then put back out onto the test track. It took until the 5th try, after 1.5 grams of marijuana, for that frequent toker to exhibit reckless impairment. But, interestingly, at the 4th try, she expressed that she'd never get behind the wheel at this level of impairment. She overestimated her own impairment before she reached it. The other drivers, even though less frequent users than she, didn't demonstrate levels of reckless impairment until they'd gotten far beyond the 5 nanogram per milliliter level as well. So let's get back to this study that just came out. Hartman and Huestis, they gathered as much data as they could on the subject of marijuana and driving. However, there are many problems with most of this data. This is from their study. Early DUIC epidemiologic studies did not provide strong evidence for cannabis causality because individuals with only non-psychoactive 11-NOR-9-carboxy THC in the blood were included in the cannabis-exposed groups. Shorten that there. 11-NOR-9-carboxy THC, or we're just going to call it carboxy THC. That's the inactive metabolite they find in your urine when you're trying to get like a drug test for school or work or whatever. It's not the active one that they're testing for in blood. That's part of the problem with a lot of these studies. She goes on to say here, carboxy THC has a long window of detection, even in blood, well after acute effects dissipate. In other words, they can still test for it, even though you're not high. In less than daily cannabis smokers, carboxy THC was detected up to 7 days after the smoking of one joint containing approximately 38 milligrams of THC. THC blood concentrations decrease rapidly after smoking. Blood collection occurs about 90 minutes after an arrest and 3 to 4 hours after an accident, long enough that many samples have become cannabinoid negative, although the blood may have been positive at the time of the event. There also were few cannabis-only cases. Multiple drugs with potential to contribute to impairment were usually found. So these are the problems. Whenever you try to study this, all of the studies we've had so far have been on inactive THC, have ignored the fact that you can have THC in your system even if you haven't smoked for days, and there's so few people that are just cannabis only. A lot of them, they're like alcohol and marijuana or prescription drugs and marijuana, so they have trouble sorting the data out. But they tried. In this meta-analysis, they tried, and let's see what they found out. Here's another problem they have, is that the selection of who you're testing here, who is likely to come up positive for marijuana, is difficult because pot smokers and people who crash cars both tend to be young male risk takers who drink and drive. Here's from the study. Cannabis smokers share demographic characteristics similar to those of other groups with a high crash risk, including youth, ages 8 to 25, 18 to 25, male sex, you know, being male, risk-taking, and high drunk driving incidents. But here is the second best quote of the whole study. Cannabis tolerance may develop in frequent smokers with less impairment than for occasional smokers with similar THC concentrations. That is the second best quote of this whole thing. Yes, absolutely. Somebody like myself who smokes a joint is going to be far less impaired than somebody who never smokes a joint smoking the same joint. I've developed a tolerance to this. The study continues by saying, statistically controlling for these potentially confounding variables sometimes makes results ambiguous. So there you go. We have the same demographic that is a high risk taking, car crashing, drinking young male demographic, also tends to be the demographic that smokes the most pot. We have the problems with the carboxy THC. We've got the problems with trying to find cannabis only drivers to study. But there's some other things we should take away from this study as well. Before we presume that pot smokers are absolutely no risk to the general public, there are some compelling data that say we shouldn't go blaze up and then get behind the wheel. From the study, DUIC after smoking during the previous hour almost doubled crash risk. A finding that withstood adjustment for demographic characteristics and self-reported driving under the influence of alcohol. Driving within 1 hour after smoking produced higher motor vehicle accident odd risks than driving within 2 hours. So I hope that as a society, as a group, as a movement, we can agree that smoking and then getting right behind the wheel is something that we shouldn't be trying to defend. I'm not saying you're too impaired. I'm just saying from a political strategy standpoint, it's going to be hard to defend smoking up behind the wheel. I know Irv Rosenfeld does it. It's going to be hard to defend. So when people like Kevin Sabet and Patrick Kennedy, they have this quote, they like to say, smoking marijuana doubles your chance of a car crash. They're not so much lying as not telling the whole truth, because they leave out that part at the beginning that says driving a car within 1 hour of smoking marijuana doubles your car crash risk. That's the way they like to play. But here's the conclusion from Hartman and Huestis from their latest study, available in that journal I told you. The debate regarding per se and zero tolerance drug driving laws is a prominent issue. Increased blood THC concentrations are strongly associated with increased crash risk, but there is no direct correlation between driving impairment and THC concentration. This is one of the government's leading researchers on the science of blood, THC, and driving impairment. Been working for NIDA for years, National Institutes of Drug Abuse. And even she is telling us there is no direct correlation between driving impairment and THC concentration. So, If a number on a blood test doesn't tell us whether someone's too impaired to drive, why have the standard? Well, this is where politics trumps science. It's because people are scared of impaired drivers and they believe, thanks to the alcohol breathalyzer, that a sciencey-sounding number can protect them from doom. Us marijuana rights advocates who are fighting to prevent a per se DUID standard have science on our side. But we face an enormous amount of political will that cares very little for science. So why not bend that political will in our favor by supporting a per se DUID standard, but one so high only the truly too stoned to drive would fail it? Now, the science shows that there are higher odds risks to driving within 1 hour of smoking pot. We also know that while THC blood readings are incredibly variable by body type, frequency of use, and time, we also know that within 5 minutes of smoking, THC readings are through the roof and then decrease rapidly afterwards. Let me give you an example. This is a chart that I've had behind me all this time that shows the distribution of THC through the body. And I'll just remove some of the graphics. You can see this. And what you find is that THC, I went too quick, didn't I? THC is spikes in the blood upon the initial smoking and then declines very rapidly from that point forward. And I'll put this chart back up here and you'll see. Sorry about, oh geez, I blew it again. Sorry for the cam people listening on the podcast. I'm not having the best day today. There we go. All right. So the chart shows that the concentration of THC is first in the blood at very high levels, and then within a half hour decreases from 100 to 20, right? And in the brain, while it increases somewhat during that first half hour, decreases very quickly from that point on. So if we can agree that cannabis smokers probably shouldn't be driving within an hour of smoking, and we have a number way above five that shows us somebody has recently smoked, perhaps that's something we should be fighting for. How about 35 nanograms per milliliter, or maybe 50 nanograms per milliliter, whatever, but find the level at which no frequent user of marijuana could possibly be at after a night's sleep, but any user of marijuana would be at if they had just recently smoked pot. Now, in that Cairo news story, the young lady was at 16 when she took the test. William Breeze did a story for Westword. He was at 13.5 nanograms. Steve Sarich claims he's somewhere between 20 and 25 when he first wakes up in the morning. So if you got busted with a 35 nanogram reading, especially considering it takes about 90 minutes between the arrest and the blood test, that would be pretty damning evidence of someone having recently smoked before driving. Now, I know it still wouldn't be scientifically accurate. The frequent toker might be able to drive just fine at 50 nanograms. But alcoholics can also make a valid argument that they can drive fine at 0.15 BAC. So this is where we as marijuana advocates have to recognize that while the laws claim to be about impairment, they're not. They're really about responsibility. So if we keep fighting these per se DUID laws without offering any alternative besides we'll just keep doing what we've been doing, we're going to paint ourselves in a political corner. They see us as asking for a new liberty while fighting any new responsibility. And when we say, well, just use roadside sobriety testing, they know that the way that they used to get the stoners that they didn't like on the road was a dog sniff and finding a baggie. And we're going to take that away from them. They feel like they want something in return. If we fight 5 nanogram per se with the status quo, we're going to lose because the science shows there is some increased risk, and it makes us look like we're trying to deny science and being selfish and not caring about safe driving. But if we fight 5 nanograms with a 35 nanogram rebuttable presumption, where you're guilty until proven innocent, where you could actually rebut the charges and prove that you weren't impaired at 35, I think we win that battle, and we look like we're caring about roadway safety. And with a smart political move like that, we could have legalization in 20 states by 2020. Just depends on how you want to think about it. We'll talk about that more in Hour 2 Utopia Talk Radio. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it.